to the show. If it's Wednesday night now, it's time for Racetrackers. Last week saw the opening of Del Mar and Saratoga, the befuddling loss of a champion, and a gutsy win by a very solid filly in Abel Tasman. This week, the three-year-old colt picture will become more clear with the Haskell in New Jersey on Sunday after we see the Jim Dandy at Saratoga on Saturday. I'm Bill Gottemer with my co-host, Mike Monroe. As you know, each week we try to capture what has transpired in the racing world and bring new information to our listeners. Please spread the word about how much fun we have here each week. And as I said, I'm proud to be joined by Mike Monroe as my co-host. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Bill. Good evening. How are you, buddy?
Well, a lot of action this week, as always, right? But Saratoga, Del Mar, just a lot of different things to talk about.
Oh, my God, what great action between coast-to-coast action, great racing at both locations. We got tons to talk about. Let's go.
Well, I guess we're gonna deviate from our normal process because Mike Smith is able to give us a call right now, and we'll get the information right from the horse's mouth, and then we'll follow up with how we usually do it with our recap. So I hope Mike will call in the next few minutes. And we'll be able to talk to him about his two crazy rides, one on the opposite end of the spectrum, a victory and a befuddling loss.
And one that no one ever thought was possible happened.
Right, right. And I guess what we're talking about, of course, is Arrogate, who came back from in his big race and came back from his tremendous race in Dubai and ran out of the money at odds of 1 to 20, causing a huge payoffs in a lot of areas and throwing the four-year-old picture into total chaos.
Absolutely, Bill. Anybody who, going into that race, anybody who thought, very few people, I'm sure, thought Arrogate would get beat, no less be off the board.
Right, right. And a lot has been said about it, and Mike has given a number of conversations, but we'll ask him a few questions and get his feeling. As I said, we hope to have him call in any second. Also, that was followed up by a victory Mike Smith rode on Abel Tasman in the Coaching Club American Oaks in Saratoga. So flew all the way across the country and wound up winning a very tight photo and surviving a foul claim.
What a great ride. I mean, Mike Smith... I mean, what can you say? He comes after being total disappointment to perhaps one of the greatest rides I've ever seen Mike Smith give. If it was any other rider, everybody probably would have criticized what the rider had done. And if he had gotten beat, I'm sure other people would have criticized. But I got to hand it to Mike Smith. He's just flawless when the money's down. And in any way, shape, or form, that was perhaps one of the most spectacular rides I've ever seen at Saratoga.
Right. Well, we'll let Mike describe it a little bit, but Abel Tasman has, for the most part, not been a front runner, and the racetrack at Saratoga was favoring front horses who were running on the front, but still nobody wanted to go to the lead, and Mike Smith sensed that about halfway through the race and made a very early move for Abel Tasman. Went to the lead and then held off a late charge by Bill Mott's horse, Elate, who ranged up inside on the rail. And Mike Smith brought Abel Tasman very close to Elate, came from outside in the middle of the track and pinned Elate down on the rail. And they finished in a very tight finish. And I guess there was a foul claim and some belief that maybe he had made it too tight, but the stewards looked at it and let it rest where the results stand the way it was. So we've had a lot of discussions of what is permissible on a racetrack and what is not, and this was kind of old-fashioned race riding. It was, I guess 30 years ago, no one dared come up the rail because they would expect that to happen. Right, Mike?
Absolutely. As was, I guess we have to, when you talk about Abel Tasman, Bill, we got to talk about the feature on Saturday at Saratoga with Lady Eli. We had the same circumstances. Irad Ortiz, what a spectacular ride he gave on Lady Eli. I mean, Many people thought that Lady Eli could have been taken down because, you know, they were talking about herding, and you know, that's been brought up on several occasions. But, you know, again, Irad Ortiz, you know, that's old-fashioned race riding, and he got the victory. And what can you say about her? What a gutsy mare she is, huh?
Well, we've talked about it so often on the show, Lady Eli overcoming double laminitis, which is very often a fatal affliction, and very rarely do horses survive it, and even more rarely do they come back to the races at the top form. Yet Lady Eli has done that, and every time it looks like things are against her, she ran against a horse by Graham Motion who did everything right, a horse called Kadira who did everything right, but just Lady Eli has that will to win that's just you know, just what sets true champions apart. It was you know, just pretty amazing to see her fight on like that, like she did, and as you alluded to, Mike, she drifted in a little bit when she got to the lead, set off a bit of a chain reaction, and the horse who finished third was down on the fence, took the worst of it, but it was a little unclear who, if anybody, had really caused it. It was just everybody going for the same spot, and it was, you know, it was, as you say, old fashioned racing. Mike, with that, I want to interrupt. We have Mike Smith on the line. I'd like to welcome
him. Oh, great. Great.
Hello, Mike. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, sorry I don't have much time, but I got a couple minutes real quick. Anyway, I just wanted to call in real quick.
Sure, Mike. Thanks. You're with me and Mike Monroe on Race Trackers, and we know you've given a thousand interviews, and we just want to, you know, both congratulate you on the ride on Abel Tasman and get your thoughts on Arrogate. You've given so many interviews. We've heard what you had to say, so you don't need to go over it again with everyone, but quite a weekend for you, I would imagine.
Yeah, you talk about an emotional roller coaster, man. Went from the lowest of lows, and then we were very blessed to win that race on Sunday and then take a little sting out of the way Arrogate ran. Again, you know, he was just so, he was just real flat and just tracks pretty deep right out here right now, and he just didn't care for none of it, man. He just didn't want no part of running. So we just got to draw a line through that and move on to the next. But I was really, really excited about the way Abel Tasman ran. I mean, this mare's really, really turning into a really, really good mare. So a lot of great things coming up in the future for us, hopefully.
Hey, Mike, Mike Monroe, congratulations on the ride in Abel Tasman. And after you gave the interview, I had to go back and watch again the head-on and what you said. And like you said, I'd never seen a horse like her get into a stride like she did. I mean, she just looked so patient doing it, and you just went on with it. I guess that was the right thing to do, Mike.
Well, it worked out. You know, I mean, it was certainly a move that could have been questioned big time, including me, but it just felt so good, and it came to her so easy. And when they went to slow it down, I was gonna have to just get in her. I was gonna have to get in her way to keep her behind them. And she's a big old mare, and if I could get to swinging on her head and get her to let go, then it takes me forever to get her back on it again. So I just it felt right, and I went with it, and it worked out, you know.
Mike, so much has been made of the new surface at Saratoga. It seems to be much more sandy than it was in the past, and I think on the first weekend that played into a lot of riders' minds that it was more of a tiring track. Did you sense it was different than in the past?
Oh, it certainly is. Yeah, it's a lot deeper right now, which, you know, hopefully it'll just gradually tighten up as the meet goes on. But yeah, it certainly started out a whole lot, you know, deeper than what we're used to out here.
Comparable to the main track at Belmont, Mike?
Yeah, something like that, except the two different surfaces. You know, one is dirt and one is more sand. You know, Belmont
right.
Is a lot of sand, whereas out here it's more of a dirt. You know.
Well, I think by Sunday, maybe by the time you got there with Abel Tasman, the racetrack had tightened up a little bit. It was on opening day on Friday. It was really soft, and I guess horses were really showing some trotting horse times. I mean, I remember one race going
yeah.
a mile and an eighth race. The mile was a minute 42.
Yeah, they're tired. The first week, you know, everywhere, anytime this place, brand new place, opens up, and you hadn't used the track in all year, and it's certainly going to start out on the slow side anyway, and And it's safe, though. It's really safe out here, and so that's the main thing.
Right. Mike, I guess I read this morning Bob Baffert said that Arrogate had a lot of dirt in his nose and mouth and face. Did you, as you said, he was just unhappy with the surface. That's a few times he's run badly, relatively badly for him anyway, on the Del Mar surface. Is that a concern moving forward?
Well, I mean, after that last race, everything's kind of a concern. But Bob's very confident that I'll be on a different horse next time he runs. I'll be on the old Arrogate.
I guess you've answered so many questions about it, but I guess we'll highlight again. How did you get cross country, and what was your feelings coming across? I mean, I guess you had a disappointing effort. It's hard to find that type of energy to continue on, I guess, and fly across the country and get to Saratoga.
Well, you got to turn the page. Turn the page, and it's time to move on to the next race. I mean, the coaching club is a very important race as well, so it's pretty easy to get up for it. It doesn't take much. But he just got to turn the page, and I know that he didn't run and get out run. He just didn't run, period. So, as long as he comes back fine, and like I said, Bob, he assured me that I'll be on the old Arrogate next time he runs. So that's all we're worried about, and he's happy, healthy, and we're looking forward to the next race, and that's pretty much it.
Mike, of course, all the Red Boys and after the fact comments. Did he show any signs of not being the same Arrogate going to post in the post parade at all? Did you have any concerns going to the gate?
He was really on the quiet side,
Okay.
But and saying that, I mean, he wasn't just dragging his head. He was just quieter than usual, man. He was very, it just, like I said, between that and the racetrack, just didn't care for it. Won his day, didn't want no part of it that day. And again, he came back fine. He came back good. So that's the main thing. We'll get him back on track.
I'm sure you and Bob will, and you'll be ready to roll in the Pacific Classic. I'm sure Bob Baffert will have him at his best.
So. Amen. Yeah,
well,
you
Mike,
got
we'll
it.
Well,
listen,
go,
guys, but I got to get going. I hate to cut it short, but I gotta get going.
No, we appreciate it. We appreciate
thank
it
you.
So much, Mike. Thanks again.
Yes, sir. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
See you soon, Mike. Always a pleasure.
Bye-bye. Okay, well, that was great. He fit us into our schedule, and we greatly appreciate that, as always. Always so willing to move his schedule around for us, which is great.
He's great,
Mike,
Bill, as was Bob Baffert, to talk about it after the race. I mean, nobody had to be more upset and dejected than Bob Baffert. And I thought it was really classy of Bob to give the interview after the race with TVG the way he did. And, Bob Baffert, he'll have this horse ready and hopefully willing to go on Pacific Classic Day.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine, and I guess it's great. I mean, we pick on Twitter a little bit, but I think it's great that there's so much conversation about horse racing, because that's always what was missing in years past. People would debate every pitch of a baseball game or every play of a football game, and yet, once the races were over, there weren't that much conversation about it. So now we have it, and it's hard to imagine three more talked about performances that Mike Smith was right in the middle of all three of them. You start with Songbird a week ago, who won, but not as impressively as some people expected, or some people had solidified their opinion that Songbird is good but not great, and others defended Songbird that hey, all she does is win. How can you knock that? Then you have Arrogate, who is a puzzling no show. And as Mike says, it wasn't like he got outrun. He just didn't care to be part of it that day. And then you have Abel Tasman, who continues to excel and still is a little bit in the shadow of Unique Bella, who's on the sidelines. So Mike Smith's right in the middle of all four of those. It's amazing.
Oh, absolutely. It it's really like, Bill, you and I spoke about it after the race and the day following. It's just that trip to Dubai, I mean, the race that he ran, you know, how much did it actually take out of him? And like, you know, like Bob said, you know, he didn't do enough with him, you know, and he probably, that race took a ton out of him. I remember when Cigar came back and Bill Mott said the same thing. You know, Cigar didn't want to get up for a couple of days after being shipped back to Belmont. And, you know, it really takes a wear and tear on these horses.
Right. I mean, let's hope he comes back and springs back to where he is. If he doesn't, I'm sure they won't run him. But I guess there's two thoughts, right? One, a very astute handicapper who you know, Lou Zito, has pointed out to me that once older horses break bad in a race, sometimes that's a sign that they've had enough. And Arrogant certainly did that in Dubai, although he didn't break bad, but he had to overcome some tremendous coming from deep far back. And I guess the other thing is colts, right? By the time they're in their four-year-old year, sometimes colts become more difficult to work with because their physiology is making them focus on reproduction, not on running.
And, absolutely. That's a very good point, Bill.
Yeah, I mean, for our listeners who may not, you know, be focused on that, you know, geldings will run on into their seventh, eighth year. But a lot of times with colts and mares, that there's a point in their life where they've turned the corner and they've given up the desire to only run and they have reproduction on their mind and that makes it more difficult not only for them to run but to train them every day, and I haven't had any indication that that's the case with Arrogant, but that is one of the reasons why, in addition to just tremendous value, it's one of the reasons why studs go off to stud, that it becomes more and more difficult for them to run as 5-year-olds. And again, for Mike, I know you know this, I'm not telling you anything, but for our listeners who may not know, when you see all male horses become horses at age 5 if they've not been gelded, so they're colts until they're 5, they're horses, and they're gelded whenever they're gelded. So now that you look in the racing form, you'll see there's very relatively few, not very few, but relatively few horses who are still running at high levels. And on the female side, they're fillies until they're 4, and they're mares when they become 5. And that's regardless of whether they're running or whether they've reproduced. It's just those are just the categories. But that's always a concern when you get later on in your 4-year-old year that they become intractable.
Right. Right. You know, Bill, I'm sure, you know, there's so much that goes into it, and you know what they say with the mares going into heat, and you know, when the filly turns into a mare and she gets into heat, and you know, there's so many issues with these horses, and you know, sometimes, you know, when, like you said, when they become older horses, you know, they just get into these little funks, and a lot of times it's very difficult to get them out of these funks, but let's hope Bob gets the Arrogant back into his career form, you know, running the Z. And don't forget, look at how many numbers he ran on the sheets. He ran -1, I think, twice, and zeros
right.
on the sheets. I mean, come on. I mean, that's unheard of. I mean, so, you know, I mean, everyone's entitled to a bad day.
Right. Well, you know, I found this interview we just did with Mike difficult to do because Caton Bradar did such a wonderful job. She's already asked him all the questions. I don't know. Did you happen to see her interview with Mike Smith on Saturday?
I did. Yes, I did.
It's just, you know, she hit all the points. She hit all the salient points and all the questions, and there's really nothing more we could ask. So we're glad he came on because we're always proud to have him on, but I was struggling a little bit to find some things to ask that, you know, that weren't
right.
Impertinent.
Right. Every question was really asked to him between the interviews that Caton gave and TVG and everyone else gave. But you know what? It's great to have a guy like Mike Smith just come on for our listeners. Just shows the dedication that he has to the game and even to us, to you, Bill, as the host of the show. And he's never turned you down, and it's great to have him on.
No, absolutely. Wonderful. Mike, we had a lot of fun up there this weekend, and we'll talk about some of the things that are happening in Saratoga. Racetrackers had their winner's circle photo, the race named after us, and that was a lot of fun. That was tremendous. And we had a Chad Brown win a race, beat Shug McGahee, so two Hall of Famers, and two top trainers and a classy race. And we were in the winner's circle with Maggie Wolfendale, and we had a picture taken. It was great. So I thank our listeners who participated in that.
That's great, and we were talking. I remember we were kidding around, saying, "Well, you're going to get your picture taken with Chad Brown." We just didn't think it was going to be that one of the two horses.
Right. Chad Brown won with the longer priced part of his uncoupled entry. We alluded to, Saratoga has a new surface, and we spoke about it last week on the show when James Bond brought it up, and it really has changed everything. And I guess what I've seen is that, in the first 6 days or so, shippers from out of town have dominated the action, and particularly shippers from Churchill Downs.
Yes, Bill, you did mention that. And if you look, maybe the surface is comparative to a Churchill Downs surface. Although I must say, out of all of the races of the weekend, and from opening day through Monday, there was a lot of great racing at Saratoga. But I cannot go. I mean, you saw it live. I watched it on TV. But one of the most impressive horses I saw throughout the weekend had to be the Kier McLaughlin trained Takaful, turning back to three quarters, where he ran it in 109.4, and he was extremely impressive. He might have been the most impressive horse of the weekend, in my opinion.
I agree. It was lights out. You know, for our listeners who may not remember, it was a horse who showed great promise, and he became impossible to rate when he tried to go out longer, meaning they would try to ask him to save his speed and spare his speed, but he couldn't. He ran in the front, and he stopped badly. He turned back to a sprint, and they said that Kieran McLaughlin did the horse whisperer-type treatment with him and tried to get him to calm down. And, again, Maggie Wolfendale was kind of right on top of it, saying that he was a different horse in the paddock, and he was calmer in the post-parade. And once those gates opened, he was just gone. And that
well,
race was faster
really
by far.
Magic. Right. Kieran really worked magic, because the Saturday before closing day, or the Saturday before closing day, he actually dumped Jose Ortiz in the post parade and ran off and had to be scratched.
Right. So, you know, he's like the little girl with the curl on her forehead. You know, when he's good, he's very, very good, but when he's bad, he's horrid.
I guess it's safe to say Kieran McLaughlin won't be looking to stretch him out any further.
I guess stay with what works, right? But you're right. He seems to be one of the major players in the race at the end of the Saratoga meet, which used to be called the King's Bishop and now has been renamed the Allen Jerkins. So
yes, absolutely.
Perfect timing. We had a couple other usual things that go on in Saratoga. We had some familiar faces went up there, some owners, and I was proud that the article I wrote, some of the owners that we wrote about had horses run very well and win. But the big surprise rider, I guess, was Ricardo Santana, who won, I think, five races in the first 3 days. And he won three in a row on Sunday, all at huge prices. So he's making a big splash on Saratoga right away.
Very strong young rider, has all the tools necessary to be a great rider, very, very good on the front end, also good judge of pace coming from behind. You can't knock the kid. He's riding lights out, and I hope he continues to do so.
Yeah, it's he rides for a number of bonds, but he rides from the Midwest. So I guess, as you say, as we said before, since the shippers won, he was on a lot of the shippers because a lot of his connections are outside New York. But I know he turned a few heads. On the flip side, our man Javier Castellano was in a bit of a funk. He broke out of it a little bit today, but at least in the beginning, the first 3 days of the Saratoga meet, I think he was 1-for-31, which is almost unheard of. And he had a lot of trouble, and he had some rides that were, wouldn't go down in his greatest hits album. So I don't know what to make of that.
Well, he also had trouble in the in the big race, in the stake race on Saturday. after winning the which he gave an excellent ride on Proctor's Ledge on Friday in the Lake George. I mean, that was just a perfectly timed ride by Javier aboard Brendan Walsh filly, which Javier rode lights out. But he had a little bit of trouble when Antonone in the feature race. You know, he kind of got intimidated a little when Lady Eli and Quidara came over a little bit, and he caught the worst of it, actually.
Right. No, he absolutely caught the worst of it, and he was quoted as saying he thinks it cost him a race. He just doesn't know who it was who fouled him. And I think reading between the lines on that, I think he didn't want to necessarily claim against Lady Eli and Chad Brown, who he was riding for in that race. So I think then there was already a stewards inquiry up already, so it wasn't like they didn't know about it. So he didn't claim foul. I think he felt it, you know, was superfluous. He wouldn't need to. But all that being said, he bounced back today. He had a number of strong rides today. He rode a horse today for Gustavo Delgado. I'm not sure if you saw that. That won on the grass, but interestingly, the horse went from 10-1 at the half mile pole to 7-1 as they finished.
Oh, wow!
Did you see that betting? That betting move?
No, I didn't see the betting. I saw the replay of the race. I did not actually see the betting itself, though.
Yeah. So watch the replay of the race, and this is not, you know, my recollection. This is on the race when they show the horses with numbers with the odds. You know, he's third. It's 10-1, and by the time he gets to the lead, he's 7-1. So that's a pretty significant punch on that. So obviously the horse was well meant, and we'll, you know, we'll give their congratulations to the connections of placing that horse and having enough confidence to place a bet on him. Our friend Carlos Martin also had a big weekend, right?
Oh yeah, Carlos is doing great. He really is. He's doing a great job. I'm very happy for him. He's a very underrated trainer, especially on the grass. He's an exceptional grass trainer, and his horse ran two ticks off the track record in Saturday's finale.
Well, he ran so well, and he won so easily, and he was so impressive, and it was so fast. I guess that Mike Watchmaker from the Daily Racing Form, a very respected race writer, has said, you know, somebody has to look into this. How could this possibly happen? And I guess Carlos was quoted as saying that the horse, they had claimed the horse, and the horse had bled. And for our listeners, again, that means they visibly bleed from the nostrils. It's a pulmonary induced hemorrhage in the horse's lungs, and it occurs occasionally. And they do it on a scale. I don't know if the scale is 1 to 10, Mike, or 1 to 5, but this horse bled a 5, which I think is a pretty significant bleed.
One to five, Bill.
Right, so it's the most significant bleed you can have, and Carlos was quoted as saying that when they bought the horse for $62,500, they thought maybe they had wasted $62,500 because sometimes horses can't come back to the races after this. But they treated it. They gave the horse time off. They treated it with typical remedies for pulmonary bleeding, and they ran the horse for $50,000, hoping that hoping they had cured it. And sure enough, they had, because he went wire to wire in almost record time.
Yeah, I mean that was lights out impressive.
Yeah, and I think it's good. I think it's good that you have the transparency, and it was good of Carlos and owner Matt Shearer to say what had transpired with that horse, because rather than the old days when everybody was just quiet about it, because the horse just as easily could have bled again. Sometimes the treatment is not successful, and he could have. So there's no reason to really speak about it beforehand, because you give mixed messages. But afterwards, when somebody asked the question, how did that happen? It was good that they were able to, in my opinion, it's good that they were able to answer honestly that they tried to cure the horse, and they did.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, Carlos, like I said, Carlos Martin is a very underrated trainer on the grass. I love Carlos Martin on the grass with all age horses. He's a very, very, very underrated trainer and an exceptional trainer for the grass.
Now I have one
thing for you, Mr. Adama. Now your streak with speaking about Carlos Martin, but your streak might be in trouble with the horse that you won three races during the meet with, Greyjoy. How about Linda Rice, Voodoo Song? winning two races in 4 days. So she might be trying to tie or beat your record for the Saratoga meet there.
Well, I don't mean to. I'll gladly take the record, but actually, we won two races, not three, but they were within 3 days. That was what was so beautiful.
Oh, right,
about it.
They were in 3 days. That's right. I thought you won three races. That's right. Two races within 3 days.
Right. It was Friday and Monday. So we won on a Friday and a Monday. But Voodoo Song, who Linda Rice trains for Barry Schwartz, won on Saturday and came back and won again today. And
yep.
he wanted a mile was the first race, and then this was a mile and 3/8, and it was one of the rare races where someone takes a huge, monstrous lead early in the race and manages to hold on. So that always makes it exciting. I was a little surprised that the horse held on, considering how fast it went the first half mile.
Oh, absolutely. Me too. I was shocked. I thought for sure that he would get caught.
So I think the horse has probably done enough already, and he'll now be able to wait for the end of the meet. I presume we won't see him again going a mile and then a mile and 3/8, both in very fast time. But congratulations to them. And
absolutely. And how about kudos to we cannot comment on what a great job Jason Service winning the Sanford with Farisian Fire the other day after breaking his maiden at Monmouth. Yeah, somebody said, Jason doesn't ship for the season, he ships for the reason. And, what a well-timed ride by Irad Ortiz. And what else can you say about Jason Service? I mean, he fires all over the places, and all of his horses are running. He's a great horseman.
Yeah, no, he does. And especially at a long price in stakes races. He won the race, the Black-Eyed Susan the day before the Preakness. And with a maiden who won a stakes race, and then he shipped in with this horse, and certainly a horse you never should ignore at a price. Speaking of prices, you and I didn't speak about this, but Mark Dilo, who's been on the show every once in a while, put together a Pick 5 ticket, and I think his partner was Dan Tordman, who's been a guest on our show also, and I think they hit it for $60,000 on Sunday night. So.
Oh, great! Where was that, Del Mar?
Yeah. No.
Oh, great!
Late Pick 5. The late Pick 5 on Sunday, so they won that. They won that race by a nose with Linda Rice in the very last, race and the very last jump. He got up, it was tremendous. It was now one of the nicer things is Mark Dilo. I haven't seen him yet. I want to call him and congratulate him, but he was so excited that he told Linda Rice that he cashed a big ticket on it, and she invited him into the winner's circle with them. So he was in the winner's circle holding the ticket up in the air. So that was kind of cool.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Yeah, he was waving the ticket. Well, with that, we're going to talk about this week, and we're proud to have Terry Finley has just called in, and we're going to talk to him about the Jim Dandy this week and his Derby winner, Always Dreaming. So, good evening, Terry. Welcome to Racetrackers.
Hey, you guys, really a pleasure to be with you, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the Jim Dandy.
Well, we've just filled out, Mike Monroe and I have just filled out talking about the first weekend, and of course I saw you up there, and I interrupted your conversation about three or four times every time it seemed like someone had your ear. It's so exciting to have a big horse like this, and before we get to the Jim Dandy winner, let's talk about the horse you unveiled with, or you won, broke the maiden with Graham Motion on I guess it was Saturday. That horse was tremendous.
Yeah, he's a cool dude. He's by the Derby winner, and it was the first one in this country for Graham Motion. On the Animal Kingdoms, they've sold really well, and we've always liked that colt, and he ran pretty well in his first start, finished fourth at Laurel, and then really put in a good effort to break his maiden up there. So it's pretty exciting when you get one that overcomes that kind of trouble. So we're excited about his future, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, he won on grass, but as you said, he had a tremendous amount of trouble, and he showed once he got clear, he just showed a tremendous stride. So congratulations on that. But of course, what we want to talk about is your Derby winner, which is Always Dreaming, who's coming back into Jim Dandy, And it's going to be a matchup between the Derby winner, Always Dreaming, and the Preakness winner, Cloud Computing. And you've drawn right next to each other, 1 and 2. Tell us your thoughts about how he's doing and how you think the race will unfold.
Doing really well. You know, Todd's got, you know, the quiet confidence, you know, that he had going into the Derby. And he's not as keyed up. I'm talking about the horse. He's not as keyed up as he was going in the Derby. He's filled out, you know, some. He's not a big strapping horse by any measure. And so, you know, I saw him today. He was in the spot behind Todd's barn, and you know, I saw a pretty good sparkle in his eye. You know, he's feeling good. He's put on some weight in the last 60 days since the Preakness. And so we're going over there with a lot of confidence, but we know – this is the short-term goal, but certainly we've got a big circle around the Travers. But as they say in baseball and football and every other sport, you got to take one game, and in our case, one race at a time. And, you know, this is not an easy spot. You know, I don't know if we'll be favored. If we're not favored, we'll vie for favoritism with Cloud Computing. But, you know, Billy Mott's got a horse in there who's I've been running on turf, and he's a cagey old veteran that Billy Mott and the Windstar boys. So, I mean, he's a legitimate horse. Obviously, the horse from California's only run once, and he's certainly the wild card, especially for the early pace, you know, setup. And the other horse Zito has, and, you know, he's run some very good numbers. So it's not as if it's a two-horse race by any stretch.
Well, I guess you have to figure how it's going to play out, and speed seems to be Always Dreaming's game, and being drawn on the inside, I would think you'll have to be forwardly placed. And that probably gives you a little bit of advantage over Cloud Computing, because he doesn't seem to have the same early foot.
No, I agree. And, you know, what we at the initial glance at the race indicates that, you know, the Doug O'Neill horse should be on the engine. You know, first time going two turns. It's an aggressive spot for a horse that's only run one time. But
yeah, that's right.
You know what? And then you think back. Okay, well, they won the Bluegrass with a maiden who's turned out to be a pretty darn good horse, and I think could be a force in the Travers. So I mean, I know one thing. Doug O'Neill is not bringing that horse all the way across country if he's not very, very confident in his abilities, you know, to put in a good effort. So, you know, I think we'll be second. I would hope that unfolds on Saturday. And you know, we've got to take it to Cloud Computing. You know, he's a horse that he's certainly in the right hands, and he's just getting better every start. And, you know, he's going to come running. We know that both of these colts have a target around the Travers, so I would say that there's a good shot. Both of them are not 100% keyed up for this race and 100% tight, but, you know, I'm just hoping that we can give everybody a good battle, and, you know, let the best horse win on Saturdays, the way we're looking at it.
Right. Well, of course, I want to let Mike get Mike in here a little bit. Mike, what do you make of and for our listeners, the horse that Terry is referring to is, of course, called Pavel, P-A-V-E-L, and Doug O'Neill bringing him in off of one win at a sprint. Mike, what do you make of that, and what have you heard on the backstretch about that horse?
Well, I agree with Terry. You know, anyone who knows Doug O'Neill knows that he's shipping for a reason. You know, he was visually impressive his first start, you know, as Terry alluded. But then again, you know, now he's got to do something he's never done before. He's got to go the two turns, and, you know, now the water's getting really deep. But, you know, he's going right from a maiden into the Jim Dandy. I know it's a small field, so, you know, you're willing to take a shot at it, as probably Billy Mott was. But, you know, Terry, your horse had run so big second time in his career start at Saratoga, and he actually he actually came off the pace that day sprinting. So I know he's been training. He trained up there as a 2-year-old. I know he has a fondness for the surface. I could see Johnny probably stalking Gutierrez the whole way around and Castellano laying right off of you guys. But, you know, I don't think you necessarily have to be on the lead, and I don't think you will be. And I know Johnny won't get involved in a head-to-head speed duel with him. So I kind of like your position from the rail. You know, it gives Johnny a couple of, you know, a little bit of patience to decide to do what he wants to do. And you know, I saw Todd's interview the other day, and the horse looks great. I mean, he visually impressive. He put on a, you know, like Todd said, you know, maybe 100, 150 pounds. I mean, he looks great. And, you know, I think you're going into the race, you know, all guns fired and ready to go.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, if you think about it, a couple people have asked me, what happened in the Preakness? Well, you know, it was a good race, and you know, we had a fresh horse to beat or to try to beat in Clyde Computing, and he showed up on Preakness Day. But, you know, you look back, and, you know, I remember him, you know, Thursday and Friday, and he looked great, and he was training great. But, he got a little ribby. You know, he had trained so aggressively for the Derby, and he put in such a big effort. You know, you forget the fact that he went a half and 46 and change. And then Monday morning he comes and he goes to Pimlico and he trains there for a couple of weeks. So, you know, you think back, and I think he was giving us signs, not blaring signs, but he, that's a tough road for, you know, a horse, especially a colt that's not a big strapping colt. And so I agree. I think he's kind of charged his batteries again, and you know, it's going to be fun. I mean, anybody that tells, you know, that invests their money in the horse business, and you know, days like Saturday are what you look forward to. I mean, if you just we're part of a great partnership, and I've said it before, we're very privileged, you know, that we got an opportunity to buy in on a special quote like this, and we paid our money. I'm not down paying that. We paid a premium for him before the Florida Derby, but everything works out. Every once in a while, you kind of things work out, and you look pretty smart in this business, because it'll humble you time and time again. But
I'm still waiting to look smart in this business. Don't sell yourself short there. It's not that easy to look smart once. So you know.
Well, all you gotta do is keep trying, keep getting humbled. Sooner or later, day after it, you know, chances are you're going to look smart at least once. And, but it's, they're going to walk on the racetrack, and it, the whole world's going to be watching. And, I hope we get the job done or we run well enough that we stamp ourselves a ticket to the Travers. And then everybody's going to turn their attention to Monmouth and see that good group of 3-year-olds. And then we're all going to, we're going to come together at the end of the month and let the best horse win in the Travers.
Yeah, we'll reconvene. Well, you know, Terry, one thing I want to mention before you came on, Mike and I were talking about the different surface in Saratoga, and what I have noticed from a handicapping perspective, is that the Churchill Downs shippers are doing very well. So you combine the fact that your horse likes Saratoga, you combine the fact that he won over the Churchill Strip when it was wet. I guess maybe a little moisture in the track either now or Travers Day is something you might appreciate.
Yes, and I know some people spend more time than they probably need to on the moisture and all that stuff. I mean, that stuff's really out of our control. Not really out of our control, but it's totally out of our control. So they all have to run over the same surface, and that's what I've always said. Every once in a while, you'll get a horse that really doesn't care for a surface, but you know, these horses are very adaptable. Usually, you know, it's funny. I was telling one of my partners the other day, you know, run these horses in the slop and they don't run well, and you say, oh, he doesn't like the slop. Well, you run them on a fast track and they don't run well. I don't hear a lot of people saying, oh, they don't like fast tracks. You know, we tend to gravitate to excuses as a whole in our business. And that's one of the things I've tried to do, is to you know, usually when you get beat, you're just not the best horse on that particular day. I think that that's really held us in good stead, right? Because you can really get tangled up in excuses, and most of the time you just need to turn the page and look forward.
Right.
Well, not
right.
to take any Terry, not to take anything away from Cloud Computing's Preakness, of course, but don't forget, you guys went from a beneficial gold wet fast rail the day at Churchill to a horrible rail the way it turned out in the later races at Pimlico. So, I mean, you were up against it, you know, and of course, Classic Empire took it to you a little bit earlier than people had expected. But, you know, it's a tough campaign, that 5 weeks, you know, between the, you know, the Derby and, you know, of course you want to bring the Derby runner back to compete in the Preakness. But don't forget, people don't realize, like Bill and I talked about, the surface of Pimlico really changed that day, and you guys wound up being up against it as much as anybody else in the race did.
Yeah, yes. You know, when you take a step back, sure, we were up against it. But, you know, I know more than a couple people have asked me, you know, Classic Empire, you know, he really took it to you. But you know what? If I was in control and I was part of the Classic Empire team, you got to take it to the Derby winner, you know, and you got to take it to a horse that you know is if you leave him unaccompanied up front, he's going to run you off your feet. So I don't have any problem with that. They do us, and, you know, the fact that, you know, Cloud Computing came up with a big race, and, you know, I give a lot of credit to Classic Empire. He ran his eyeballs out at the Preakness, and I knew he was probably going to go to the Haskell, but unfortunately, you know, he's not running in either one of these races. But you get a thing like that, and I think back to Doug O'Neill last year with his Derby win in Nyquist. It was very, very similar in the setup of the race. You know, he just never settled in the Preakness, and you know, those horses that run their eyeballs out of the Churchill, they go to Preakness a lot of times, and they're on the engine, and it really doesn't
right.
set up real well.
Well, Terry, we spoke about that on the show. I don't expect you to have heard it, but we spoke about it the night before the Preakness, saying that that was one of the real choices that the Classic Empire camp had to make, that if they left you alone on the lead, they could be running for second money, and they probably would be more aggressive. And as you say, it's not – I don't think they did anything to try to hurt your chances. I think they did everything to try to enhance theirs, and that's the way the game is played, and it's just the way it shook out. So to me and to Mike here on the show, it wasn't all that surprising. That it was surprising that it was as aggressive, but the fact that the horse was more aggressive towards being on the front wasn't a surprise. I want to give some kudos to one of your associates. How exciting was it to have Joseph Migliori in the World Series of Poker, going out there with 7,000 people and getting down to within the last 100?
Yeah, it was really exciting. You know, he is one of the absolute top of the crop of the rising stars in the business, and you know, a younger person, and he loves playing poker. You know, he plays with you know, the Kieran McLaughlins of the world and the other people in the industry that like to, you know, have as their hobby poker. So he's put his time in, and I know he thinks that his age and his energy level really helped, because you think about it, you know, those players, they get out there and they're there and they're really I mean, it's a fatiguing week long, you know, poker tournament, and I think he really held up well as opposed to some of the other guys. And he's a smart player. He's learned and he's studied the game, and I give him a lot of credit. And I will tell you, I was just saying, you know, if he makes $1.8 million or whatever, you know, the top four or five guys made, I wasn't sure he was coming back to West Point Thoroughbreds, but we were all rooting for him. But I mean, I know his dad, you know, he actually sat with me in the box for a race today, and he's he's proud as a peacock. And, you know, I'll give you a little inside baseball. You know, Mig called me right after the Derby. And, you know, we had Joe out there and as well as, you know, the rest of a couple other people on the team. But he didn't get to the winner's enclosure or the winner's podium for the Kentucky Derby. He got fairly close. I think he finished fourth. But he said he was more happy that he saw his son up there than he was if he would have had a chance to get there as a jock. And I just, you know, he got super emotional about it. And I'm sure to see your son who is trying to make a name for himself in the business on the podium for the Kentucky Derby is, I'm sure it was a huge thrill for the Big. And, you know, I know they've been great parents and have a wonderful family.
Yeah, well, that's great. It was a lot. It was exciting. It was vicarious thrill for me following it from afar, and I congratulated him when I saw him Saturday morning. Well, Terry, we got to thank you. We're rooting for you on Saturday. You had a big crowd out there this week. I'm sure you're going to have a big crowd out there on Saturday, right? This is one of the premier events.
Yeah, it's not that big of a partnership. We did not get that big of an interest, unfortunately, but it is what it is. But we got into the arena before they shut the door, which is, you know, the most important thing. But, you know, this is where we try to shine every year. It doesn't always happen like that, but, you know, we like to think that we're helping the game and partnerships overall. I tell people, like, partnerships are the power of the future, and more and more horses are owned in partnership, whether they be public partnerships or private partnerships. But, you know, we've got to embrace even more. And I give it to Naira; they've done a good job, and they get it. They get the fact that partnerships are a growing force in the business. So. I love it when I see people walking around with their colors and their hats and everything else, because, you know, it's really, really sustaining the sales and the racing side, you know, the partnership entity. So I'm proud to represent a lot of people, and we're going to continue to try to get those good horses and try to get to the winner's circle with people.
Well, you do a great job, Terry, and you market it the right way. You have good people working with you, and you have investors. I mean, that's what it's all about. But it's the way you market it. I mean, you guys are out there. You guys are at Belmont in the morning. You know, me as a jockey agent, I go see Terry Finley. You know, I'm always talking to him. Always, you know, Tom Bellhouse is a good friend, and Joey Migliori. I mean, you guys market it the way it has to be done. This is the future of horse racing, is the partnerships. We need those investors to come in and to keep staying with the syndicates, because that's where the future is.
Really is. Well put. And, you know, people ask me all the time. A lot of people are interested and intrigued in a big way by our business. A lot of people. Like, you know, you look at the demographics of, you know, people, a couple gets in, you know, they're 60 years old. They've accumulated some wealth, and they're looking for something else to do. They don't both golf, and they don't have a boat. So what do? This is a perfect opportunity for a couple a little bit later on in their life to get involved in something they can do together. And I see it more and more and more. And you know, we just as an industry got to continue to work to try to attract those people and show them like how cool and unbelievable exciting this business is. And, you know, they'll be a bigger and bigger part of the partnerships and of ownership in general.
Well, it's the perfect birthday gift. So, you know, so anybody who's thinking about giving somebody a 50th or a 60th birthday gift, you know, give Terry a call and give him a share in a horse. And
absolutely, Bill. It's a Class A operation. Like I said, you know what? Terry talks to everyone, and he's out there, and he promotes it the right way. His partners do it the right way. Everybody, me as a jockey agent, whether I ride for Terry or not, with one of my riders, Terry always is willing to give anyone a shot. And you know, Terry, you know, you do it the right way, and I'm proud to say you're a friend of mine, and I always look forward to seeing you in the mornings, you know, especially at Belmont and Saratoga.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. And I tell you, the feelings are mutual. And we as an industry and people, professionals in the industry, we don't have to take a backseat to anybody. And we shouldn't. And we don't. I know we don't. I don't, you know, I wouldn't trade our industry for any other sport in the world. So, you know, I say we need to be proud of our industry and proud of the things that we do for our horses and for our fans.
Well, Terry, we want to thank you, and we want to say along those lines, if you want to hear someone who loves the industry, and I know you know her, I had the opportunity, the pleasure of interviewing Barbara Livingston, and we're going to play that a little bit later in the show. And Barbara Livingston probably loves this game more than anybody, and her pictures are just absolute artwork. And you know, she captures all the things that we try to capture in words, she captures in pictures. So you know, I hope your partners will listen to hear her speak about you know, how much she loves this game. So it's just
absolutely. And Terry, before you go, I also got to compliment you guys on the great job with that 2-year-old filly, best performance in the Schuylerville the other day. She ran lights out. She just ran into a buzzsaw that day. But I cannot wait. And I know I'm gonna grab you on the side of this when I see you, but I'm gonna tell you again. But I cannot wait until you run this filly on the grass, because I think she's gonna be a superstar on the grass. She's an broken vow out of a smart strike mare, Bill. And I'm telling you, I just think that she's gonna be lights out on the grass, Terry.
Yeah, no doubt. So, we're excited about her. I you know, hopefully she's got an engagement in the spinaway at the end of the month. But I will tell you about Barbara Livingston. I drove by her the other day. She was on the far turn taking pictures, and I drove by. I stopped and I said, I hope you, on a regular basis, you take time to tell yourself and to realize you are the best in the whole world at what you do. And she just laughed and smiled. But I hope she does, because we all know that she's at the very top of the list of you know, photographers in our business and across the world. You know, and I know a lot of people take pictures, but she is in a league all by herself.
No, absolutely. And well, Terry, we've kept you long enough. I know you have, you're busy up there, and you know, we're always happy when you call, and we can't thank you enough. And good luck on Saturday and with the whole West Point operation. And I won't see you this week, but I'll see you next week when I get back up there.
Absolutely. Look forward to you guys, and keep up the great work. Always great to promote the great sport of horse racing.
See you soon, buddy.
Terry Finley, everyone. Well, that was great, and I am excited. You can tell, Mike, I'm excited by the interview we did with Barbara Livingston yesterday, and then we're going to play that again. I'm pleased to say, though, we have another superstar on the phone. We have Carlos Martin has called in. I guess maybe his ears were ringing. He heard what we were saying, the nice words we were saying about him a few minutes ago. So let's jump to Carlos.
Great.
Good evening.
Hi,
Carlos. You're on Racetrackers.
Good evening. How are you?
Good. You're here with Mike Monroe. And Carlos, we were just talking about how wonderful your barn has been doing and what a fast start you've got off to at Saratoga. So congratulations.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it very much. Yeah, things look like the first few horses look like they fired and they all ran well. We ran a maiden that we liked a lot. Todd, I think, probably ran the fastest maiden I've seen in recent memory, a horse that has 109 buyer, but our little horse, Jordan Admiral, came back with 82. I think he'll be a horse that'll be a useful horse this fall and this later on in the year. And then the horse that we claimed with Matt Scherer, that the guy from Fairhill did a great job getting back to us and looked like he came back and ran an impressive race the other day. It was a 50 claimer, but he did it like a horse that has some promise. I think he's always shown promise, so hopefully we'll keep him in that form. We could have some real fun with him this fall also in some of the turf races. So it was exciting to always get off at Saratoga early, because everybody knows what a tough meet this could be. If you get off in the wrong first few weeks, it can be a long meet.
Right. Once everybody starts reminding you that you haven't had a winner, you don't need people reminding you, but they tend to do it anyway. Carlos, we complimented you on the great job you did with Matt Scherer's horse, who you claimed, but more than that, that you were forthcoming when people asked, you know, how did the turnaround come about, and you spoke about how that horse had bled in the race that you claimed him from, and you had to kind of retool him and put him back together.
I'm sorry?
I'm saying we spoke about how you spoke about the horse with Matt Scherer, who you claimed, and that when people asked how, you know, how you had that form reversal, you were forthcoming and said that the horse had bled in the race that you claimed him from, and that you had to start from scratch and cure the horse from that bleeding problem. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, the horse was a good horse. Matt picked him out because he had 95 fire or something against Chocolate Ride, which you all know is a really, really nice turf horse. So he was borderline running against three other dens, whatever condition he was running out of town against real horses that were, you know, grade two and grade three stake horses getting beat 2 and 3 lengths. And I think the horse even won a stake in Japan. So, I mean, he had some good form. The day we claimed him, he had the little issue after the race. So there was no other thing to do, I told Matt, except we all decided, and the racing manager, Brendan Henney, to start from scratch. The horse, you know, had a lot of ability, obviously, from his past form, and everything didn't go good the day we took him. So we just started from scratch, sent him to Bruce Jackson. The guy did an amazing job at Fairhill. So it was more management, like just letting the horse's lungs heal. And they just did a great job at Fairhill. The guy does an amazing job, amazing facility. He has every known, you know, aqua treads, every kind of high-tech, you know, the state-of-the-art rehab center for any kind of injury. So it was just worked out great. Sometimes a plan comes together, so I just got a kick out of social media. You know, one guy said I got the hot sauce, so I had to. I know I shouldn't get involved in those kind of things because everybody's talked, you know, everybody's got their opinion. So I took a picture of Glorious Empire saying, I like ketchup, not hot sauce, pal. So I laughed about it a little bit. What can you do?
Yeah, no. Well, it's good that people show the interest. I mean, of course, there's a million opinions, and some of them are ignorant, and some of them are insulting. But it's good for the game that everybody talks about it, and it's good that people get to understand that it isn't they're not machines, right? Sometimes they run well because everything's going well with them. Other times they run badly because there's things that are bothering them that you don't know about until they run, and it's not. I mean, they're just simply not machines, and they're not pure numbers.
No, exactly. And this horse is a beautiful horse, and he probably just needed a break regardless. You know, the bleeding was one thing, but even when we scanned his lungs, they weren't that bad. That was one of those unusual hot days, humid days, where everything came together. It was a sprint race. He was up close, battling. Who knows? You know, maybe his immune system was knocked out from the shipping and back and forth. I mean, there's so many factors that go into this. There's no right or wrong answers except the results, what happens at the end of the day. And Matt put the time and the money into the horse. And there was careful planning involved, and the horse responded. So hopefully he's a horse that can keep on going, and we'll try to manage him right, not get carried away and space his races. And hopefully he can come up with another big performance. That was a 103 buyer. So we'll take that every day of the week if we can keep that up. I think he's going to win some nice races.
That's right.
Carlos, not to switch gears from turf to dirt, but Bill and I were talking as the show opened up, and maybe get your opinion because you're up there every day and you're training over the track. Have you noticed the difference in the surface this year on the main track at Saratoga?
Well, the surface seems like, I guess the first few days, it looks like everybody was saying that the track was a very safe track, but it was a slower as far as some of the times were going. I guess some of those races seemed like they were laboring. They ran the real good maidens the other day. They won 152 for a mile and eighth and stuff, and even the big race, the big fillies. It seems like it might be a little bit. I mean, I've never got to be honest. I've always had a lot of luck on the main track. But the last couple of years, everybody, I guess, depends what kind of meet you're having. They were complaining about a lot of horses getting hurt and stuff. Not serious injuries, but injuries where the horses would have suspensories and hind end stuff on the main track. And of course, you know, it seemed like a lot of people were complaining. I don't know how great their meets were going or not, but I think the track is excellent. I think that Glenn does an excellent job. I think he's, you know, amazing, amazing track superintendent, and he's willing to listen to the horsemen, and you can call him and ask him anything. And it seems like he genuinely cares about your opinion. And, you know, it's such a hard game. You know, it just seems like sometimes things happen and there's nothing you can predict rhyme or reason why it happens. You know, I think Glenn, like I said, does an outstanding job.
Well, Yvonne is hitting on all cylinders since Belmont, Carlos. Since even the closing, you know, closing last couple of weeks at Belmont, your horses are really running good, and you know, we hope you keep it up. And even tomorrow, I see you have one in the third race. You had a little bit of an excuse last time, Foreign Affair with a bad break, and I expect her to run a lot better tomorrow.
Yeah, I think so too. I think she's got a little talent, and hopefully, she's in the right spot. Everything. Kind of, I don't know exactly why she broke the way she did last time. She kind of was had her head up in the air a little bit. She seemed like they turned her loose in time. The first thing I thought of is, boy, did they hold out to her in the gate, because it was so weird, because she had run a few times and had probably broke her, of course. She hadn't run in many months, so we took her to the gate and popped her out of there, and everything seemed to be in order. But that day, she just kind of had a few minutes after Chris Pop Clement had a silly, I forgot her name, that flipped in the gate a little bit. So it was a little bit of a delay, and then she just was looking around. Next thing you know, they broke, and she kind of watched everybody come out and then came out, really hesitated a little bit. So that definitely, after that, she lost all chance, and she just galloped her around there, and she finished up a little bit down the stretch and was only beaten, I think, 5 or 6 lengths. So hopefully, yeah, with the break running tomorrow, she'll be right there.
Bill, I tell everyone, this is I know Carlos a long time. I remember his grandfather was a very close friend of mine, his father. I remember Carlos and I, when I first started working for Old Glory Stables, and they had horses with Carlos's dad and his grandfather also. But as I was said before on the show, before I even called in, he is a very, very talented trainer, and any owner that's looking to give a horse to a young, talented trainer, you don't have to look any further than Carlos Martin. He does a great job with his horses. He's always there. He has a great eye for horses, and he knows exactly where to run them. And he does a terrific job.
Thank you, buddy. That's very kind of you. Kind words.
Yeah, of course we agree. And Carlos, I know how proud you are of your grandfather. That was a beautiful tribute somebody put together on Facebook, wasn't it, of your grandfather's stakes winners?
Yes, a gentleman from Ohio, Chuck Sterzinger, I think his last name, a very nice man, and he's a big fan, and he's the last 6 months or a year got a page, a Sigmund Sommer Frank Martin page, or a Sigmund Sommer Sham page. I forgot exactly how the page is headed, but he's always putting up old memories and a lot of good times and a lot of success that my grandfather had with Mr. Sommer over the years. And you know, he'll have pictures, and he did his stuff on Sham, and he'll do things on autobiography and old articles, and you know, yeah, it was amazing. I really enjoyed it. It was really well put together, well done.
Right now, I also heard a rumor, Carlos, that they're running horse racing trivia nights at the Hall of Fame, and that because you always win, they're not going to allow you to participate anymore. Is that true? That you've won those trivia nights so many nights in a row?
I don't know about that. I think it would be interesting to do it, but I think that there's a few people. Mike is pretty good at actually sitting right next to you. He's not too shabby. And the Toscanos, you know, growing up, we always talked racing, you know, kind of in the same era. And John and Robbie Toscano, they're probably as good as it gets, too. So I don't know. I think maybe 10 years ago, I think I'd be in trouble now. I'd be a 10-to-1 shot against some of these guys. They're pretty good. They remember.
No, Bill, he's reeling you in, Bill. He's still 6-to-5 in that spot.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm being asked to play, and next thing I know, Carlos, I keep talking about this, but I've been asked to be on the Rate the Greats panel for Equestricon coming up in the middle of August that they're having in the Civic Center, and certainly if when we talk about great trainers, your grandfather will be right smack center there, in my opinion. So we'll make sure we get that out there during that conversation. But Carlos, congratulations on the good results. Keep up the good work, and I know Saratoga is tough on trainers. It's tough. We had Mike Hushin on, who said it's tough to move everybody up there. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of money, but it's a lot easier, I guess, when you start having winners like you're having right now. So keep up the good work.
Yeah, no. Thank you so much for the time and for the interview. I appreciate it, guys. Have a good evening.
You too, Carlos. We'll see you soon.
Carlos Martin, everyone. Bye-bye. Yeah, Mike, I don't know if you knew what we were alluding to, but on Facebook, somebody put up a montage of Frank Martin's history.
I saw it. Frank Martin, I was very, very close with Frank Martin. As I first became a jockey agent, he not only gave me a big start with the limited stock he had, but when I had Pablo Morales, he also put me on my first winner as a jockey agent. So I'll never forget Pancho. He was a good friend and a class act, and
what can you say about being a horseman? That goes without saying.
Right, right. Well, this has been a jam-packed show. What I want to do, I don't want to keep the Barbara Livingston interview too late because a lot of people are waiting for it. But we will mention this week there's a horse called Rocketry running on Friday for Centennial Farms, which I think took all the worst of it last time and is plenty talented. And that's probably a horse you should use in whatever gambling you're doing on Friday up at Saratoga. It's one of the middle races, one of the later races. But we'd also be remiss if we didn't speak about the Haskell. The Haskell's the race at Monmouth on Sunday for three-year-olds. It's a $1 million purse. It has many of the other Triple Crown horses other than Always Dreaming and Cloud Computing, and I guess Irish War Cry for Grand Motion. This has been the target race even more so that for the owner, even more so than the Kentucky Derby. She said she'd rather win the Haskell, and that's not surprising since the Haskell is, in fact, named after her father. So Irish War Cry will probably be on all cylinders, but we have Battle of Midway for Jerry Hollendorfer, who was on the show and spoke about how well he's developed. You have McCracken come back. You have Chad Brown having the horse you like, Timeline, and the horse,
yes,
Practical Joke. I mean, it's just a tremendous race. I mean, whoever comes out of that race will be will have earned it well.
Oh, absolutely. It's here again, Bill, what another great weekend of racing with the Jim Dandy on Saturday and the Haskell on Sunday. I mean, you know, this is what it's all about. This is the time of the year where I mean, you know, all eyes are focused on horse racing. I mean, you know, this is what it's all about. And a three-year-old, three-year-old crop, like Terry alluded to, you know, how many are going to come up for the Travers, which could shape up to be the best race of the year so far?
Right. Well, unlike other years, there's no real pro tem favorite in the three-year-old of the year category. You know, the three-year-old of the year category, suffice it to say, is going to be decided in the next 12 weeks. It's, you know, whatever has happened already has not cleared up the picture. There's a lot of good colts, and a lot of them, you know, will have beaten each other, and a lot of them will run against each other, and it's going to be decided on the racetrack, which is an awful lot of fun.
And Bill, before you go to the interview, I just think that tomorrow is a nice stake to John Morrissey, 6.5 furlong for New York Bred Statebreds. And I'm going to give the racetrackers, we gave our horse last week, but we ran into a Kieran McLaughlin Buzzsaw with Pattern Recognition, where we finished second. But I'm going to go out on a limb tomorrow in the Morrissey, and I'm going to come up with a horse, Brett Calhoun's, who's 15-1 on the morning line, named Fish Trap Road, who returns against New York Breds, picks up the hot Santana junior jockey, and we're going to get 15-1, and hopefully we could take it all down. I think he's going to sit a perfect trip, stalking, busting it, and I expect him to make first run on, so hopefully we can get everyone's money back from Pattern Recognition last week and move on to Fish Trap Road in the feature. And I also do like the Carlos Martin horse very much in the, I believe it's the third race, Foreign Affair, who is the number 5 horse. And he picks up Florence Giroux, and I expect him to run much better.
Okay, so this is tomorrow, so Thursday. Third race at Saratoga. What the horse's name is? Foreign Affair?
Yes, number 5.
Okay. And then we go to, and then also on Friday, or Thursday rather, we go to the ninth race. And Mike, I think I read Bustin' It is going to be scratched. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I think I saw on Twitter that Bustin' It's going to await a race later in the month.
Okay, well then we'll be on the lead, and we might be difficult to catch.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure about that, but that's the ninth race tomorrow, Fish Trap Road, number 6 with Ricardo Santana. Well,
yes.
Well, good. I mean, I want to get to the Barbara Finley interview. I was so happy with it, and Mike, I hope you'll listen to it. We'll wrap up the show right afterwards. I can wrap it up myself. It's about 20 minutes long, but for our listeners,
absolutely,
who don't know Barbara Livingston, you'll know her by the end of this. She sat down. She's so talented, but obviously you'll see so humble. You have to drag the accolades. You have to say the accolades, her accolades yourself, because she won't. And we had just a great interview with her, and I'm really proud of it. And so we'll play that for the next 20 minutes, and I'll come back and say goodnight, and we'll move on to next week.
Looking forward to hearing it, Bill.
Thank you, Mike. Well, it's my great pleasure to welcome Eclipse Award-winning equine photographer Barbara Livingston to Race Trackers. Good afternoon, Barbara.
Good afternoon, Bill. Hi, everybody.
Well, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know you're always busy, but Saratoga is a particularly busy time for you in the racing world.
Yeah, what a great problem to have, isn't it? No complaints. Well, I mean, not many.
So when people used to complain about their luck, my grandmother used to say, if you're lucky enough to be in Saratoga, you're simply lucky enough, you know. So that's,
I like your grandmother. Those are words to live by. That's fantastic.
That's right. Well, those of our listeners who don't know you by name certainly absolutely know you by your work. You've been a prolific equine photographer for many years now and photographed all of the greats and have traveled the circuit throughout the country to picture your picture horses and riders and see backstretch scenes, and it's just, and it seems to be a love of your life from the very early days.
Absolutely. I used to think it was a passion, but I looked passion up and that didn't seem quite strong enough. Obsession is sort of bordering on not good. It's so strong. And I think it's sort of an obsession because it really consumes me from the minute I wake up until I, you know, go to sleep and wait for the next morning.
Well, you're a lucky person to be in a position where your living so perfectly melds with, as you say, your obsession or your passion. You've had tremendous, unbelievable success, and let's get this out of the way before you're way too modest to bring it up yourself. But you've won 4 Eclipse Awards, 3 for photography, one for multimedia presentation with the Daily Racing Form, and I'm sure the first one was exciting, but I'm sure each and every one of those awards is equally exciting.
Yeah, you sort of never get used to that. It's always fun to. You know, be honored by people that you work with and people you respect and the people who actually give you your living. You know, I spend my entire lifetime recording other people's lives. So every so often to be acknowledged for it is quite the kick. Yeah, I never get over it. It's great.
Yeah, well, it's conveying the beauty of it. This game tends to be, the thoroughbred racing game tends to be beautiful and harsh at the same time. It tends to be cut and dry yet emotional, and your photos capture each and every one of them. This week, I guess you had a wonderful photo of a champion, Lady Eli, coming out of the gate when another horse broke through the gate before the start. It just shows the strength of rider and horse.
Yeah, it is remarkable. That's part of the fun. You know, that's one of the many fun things about photographing horse racing. A gentleman that works with me named Tim Whitaker, he just started following horse racing. And he said, it's the anticipation of not really knowing, you know the horse is going to be on the track, you know someone's going to win the race, but you never really know what's going to happen. And that's tremendously exciting. And, you know, that even goes down to when you have your ticket in your hand and whether or not you're going to win. There's just so much to it that, you know, visually, obviously, but then just emotionally, it's remarkable and wonderful and mesmerizing, and you can't get away from it.
Right. It's intoxicating because there's always another one coming up, too.
Perfect word, indeed.
Right. I mean, it's as important as each race is, you know, even the amazing highs and the amazing lows, you know, I guess only someone who's as youthful and as exuberant as Jose Ortiz could win the Belmont Stakes and yet decide to ride 2 races after the Belmont because it's that much fun, right?
Right. Touche. Yeah, he's not just doing it for the money. There's just, when you're there, you feel more alive than you tend to feel in other places. And that's a great feeling, and you want to repeat it. Absolutely. Intoxicating is a great way to put it.
I mean, as an artist, you've been responsible for conveying that to an outside world that doesn't always understand it. And when I say that, you know, you're Eclipse Award-winning photographer, which is an honor because it's the people in the industry. But you've had a tremendous amount of success conveying those photos and those images to other places, such as Vanity Fair. You've been on the cover of Vanity Fair. Your picture's been on the cover of Sports Illustrated. How have you found that crossover to convey with other similar artists, photographers or artists, to explain what it is that you do?
Yeah, you know, I've been very fortunate in that I worked for the Blood Horse for many years, and now I'm chief photographer for the Daily Racing Form. For about 10 years now, which helps to get my photographs out to a pretty large audience because the horse racing people are all watching it, and therefore it shows up on other searches too. So I'm very fortunate to have a large audience. And I actually, my photos were inside Sports Illustrated, But I did get a little picture on the cover of Vanity Fair, which is pretty crazy. So basically, people find me when they have stories of national interest. Sometimes they're strange ones, like I had a nice picture in People magazine, but it was because MC Hammer went bankrupt. So it's a picture of him with light. So sometimes it's for odd reasons, but you know, other times it's for good reasons. And I've just been fortunate enough that people pay attention, and maybe just my longevity, that sooner or later, if somebody needs a picture from 15 years ago, there aren't that many of them out there, but I probably have spent my Saturday nights posting those online, and people can find them.
Well, again, you're too modest. My brush with magazine fame was a picture of me was in the first episode of a first issue of Us magazine, which was a competitor to People.
Sure, I remember Us.
Yeah, and they did a story on Lori Conley, who was a trainer and fashion model, whom I worked for as a hot walker when I was a kid.
Right.
And so they took a picture of the entire bond. So I always tease my kids that, you know, People magazine is one thing, but I was in Us. You know,
it's even more special because you're more rare, because there are a few of those. I like it. I hope you have a large print of that on your wall.
Yeah, I don't. I have it somewhere. But well, Barbara, you came about this naturally. You grew up in Saratoga. You wound up going to school for photography at Syracuse. Upstate New York has always been sort of your base, I presume?
It certainly has, and you've studied up. Very good. I did move to Kentucky twice, right out of Syracuse. Actually, once out of high school and then once out of Syracuse. And both times I sort of was rebuffed there, and it was very difficult for me because I had to do this. I had no other option for some reason. I don't know why, but basically, I would die if I didn't photograph racehorses. So I came back to New York, where I was comfortable again, and began working for the Blood Horse, sending pictures of the major races. And then it just built from there, started doing farm work. And this is the early 1980s. And just kept going from there, and it kept building from there. And then I started wintering in Florida because horses go away, so you have to chase them. What a big problem to go to Florida.
Right.
And it just carried on from there. I've just been too stubborn to ever give up, and I've been too singular in purpose and devotion to what I do, to the horse racing people and the sport and the beauty of it.
Well,
so
obviously,
I've just never given up.
I mean, obviously, you have a pristine reputation in the sport, and that's wonderful. You've seen a lot of changes, and I want to talk about two changes. Mm-hmm. One, before we get to the changes in technology, which I'm sure is a big deal. Mm-hmm. I watch what you do, and I've seen you over the years, and either I've been nearby and doing my own thing at the racetrack, but mm-hmm. but it's physically taxing what you do. I see you run from one spot to another, carrying large lenses, carrying things, bumping through people, trying to make sure that you get there before the scene misses. How do you keep up with that type of pace? It must be exhausting.
You try not to think about it. My mom told me when I was young, she said never slow down because she was afraid to slow down that she'd never get going again. So I just sort of learned to just keep going, and I ignore. Like, the cameras can be 25 to 35 to 40 pounds. Sometimes I'm carrying four or five of them. Usually I'm carrying three. But I just sort of put them on each other's shoulders so you got equal weight distribution. And then luckily there's good bone structure. And I probably won't get osteoporosis of all the things I might get. And so, therefore, I'm just pretend that I'm not doing that. When somebody actually says those must be heavy, and I think about it, then I sort of get sad. So then I try not to think about it anymore. And you try to think ahead what's going to happen with, you know, where the horse will be going, where the scene's going to happen. Sometimes you're wrong, but you just want to make sure you're there and you're not missing it.
Right. Well, I mean, there are great distances to cover, too, because as you say, there are again, my family used to say that, my grandmother used to say, when you're the day at the races, you walk more distance than the horses run. And
by far.
Know, right. And in your instance, you know, you're trying to be on the backside and the front side all at the same time. And I guess it is just from experience and just from what you somewhat expect as to where you position yourself, whether it be at the start or whether at a turn or near the finish.
Yes, definitely. And sometimes you are incorrect, and sometimes you you're standing there in one place and you watch something go on about 50 feet away or 50 yards away, and you think, yeah, I probably should have foreseen that. Or sometimes you can't. But I just tend to not miss on those things as often as a lot of people do, because I am willing to just keep charging ahead
and not really thinking about the effort involved in moving a half mile more quickly than a horse might move at a quick walk, for instance.
Right. Well, the other thing again with the taxing nature of it is the hours. And when I go to Saratoga, I liken it a little bit to a merry-go-round. You can get on or off at any time of the day because there's something happening 24 hours a day. You can the races dominate the afternoon, the training dominates the morning, and socializing dominates the night. You can kind of get on or off anytime you want. You know, if you go to the barns early in the morning and you're at the races all day, it's a 14-hour day, correct?
I would love to have a 14-hour day. It would be like a holiday. Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, you get to the track by 5:30 because the sun rises around 5:38 right now, and horses are on the track by then, so you better be there. You don't want to miss it. I work till around 9:30 or 10 or 10:30 if it's turf training. Then I edit the morning stuff, change into afternoon clothes, get back to the track by 12:15, 12:30 to make sure if I leave, which I don't always. And then you got the whole day. And then I usually stay there till after sunset because it's easier to edit in the photo room there. It's nice and quiet. And then you mentioned a social life, but that doesn't really happen. I sort of just sit there and I want to make sure to keep up with my work so I don't fall too far behind.
Right.
And that's
well,
fine. It's my choice, certainly.
Well, you have to remember when I'm in Saratoga, I'm on vacation, so we squeeze in the social side of it.
It seems the whole rest of the world is on vacation here. God bless them for keeping our economy going.
Well, you know, my father worked at the racetrack, and he taught me a long time ago that you know, it was work for him, and it wasn't, you know, everybody else was on frolic and detour because that's what they're there for. But when you work there, it's a whole different
absolutely
discipline you need to have. Let's talk a little bit about the change in technology. The photography business went through so many changes in the last decade or maybe decade and a half. I mean, it went from film to digital, and I assume you still do all your work in digital with film rather.
No, I've done only digital since 2003, pretty much.
Okay.
I haven't even picked up a roll of film, I don't think, since 2005. And in 2003, actually, the quality of digital was really quite awful, and now it's really quite good. So the stuff from 2003, I look at it and cringe, but it was what the Blood Horse asked us to do, so we all did it.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the change has been monumental, and I'd say it's the largest change that photography would have had maybe since the advent of color photography, maybe even before that, because at least that still was film and you still had to put the same work into it. It for me, I'd say for most photographers, has been much more difficult over the ease. Like the ease is that we don't have to go to a photo lab, process film, make prints, run to LaGuardia or Albany Airport, go to the Delta Dash counter and dash those pictures to Kentucky overnight to get to the publication, which is what we used to do. But now so many people take photos that the value sort of has been diminished tremendously. Like 500 people will take a picture of American Pharoah winning the Travers. So you have to think of a way for yours to be good enough to actually make it still have a value because those people are all giving them away on Facebook and Twitter.
Right.
And so that's been a really difficult challenge. You know, and basically what I've tried for is consistency and quality, you know, for the claiming races, for every track I go to month after month, year after year. And so far I've been rewarded for that dedication to it, but it certainly made it a lot more difficult.
Well, I guess all forms of journalism have gone through that, right? Certainly the print journalism. I mean, how many words are written and never read by anyone? And I guess the same goes for photographs now, for how many photographs are taken and not really seen by anybody but the person who took it, maybe not even that person, if they take it and don't bother to look back at it at some point.
Right, yeah, they certainly have become more disposable to a lot of people, but they've also – what I always find interesting now is that so many people will steal online pictures. They'll take them from drf.com, put them on their blog or whatever, and then when you say, okay, how about $20, they'll say, no, it's free because it was online. And I find it interesting that they now think photos have zero value, but they all want to use them.
Right.
It's sort of contradictory. And I'm sure that's the same with journalism. I'm sure people have, you know, their paragraphs taken or whatever used, and people think they should be allowed to. Yeah, it's a difficult time. It's an interesting time.
Well, the music industry has gone through that as well in a big way. But I guess in some ways, Barbara, do you think that – your photographs have become more valuable because they actually are one of yours. I mean, you know, painters and, you know, there's a lot of people who paint, but of course, if it's an original by someone, I would think that in the equine world now, the fact that there are so many, that to have an actual Barbara Livingston photo would be.
I thank you for saying that, and I have certainly had a lot of people that recognize that and actually want my name on things, and with how hard I work, it's incredibly, it makes me feel really proud that some people actually do care about the difference and, you know, just how hard I work on the quality, and I want to represent every horse in the best light. I want to represent the sport as magnificently beautiful and positive as we see it. I mean, there's so much good about it, and I think that people recognize that that is my main goal, and they appreciate that, and they appreciate the 40 years. I started taking horse racing photos in 1971.
Okay.
So that many years?
Okay.
Oops, I'm old.
Yeah. Well, I'm in the same category. The trick for this game is, anything about this game, the trick is longevity. A lot of people come and go.
Yeah.
The trick is not to go.
Absolutely, to have it really be what you live for. I find it fascinating. I just looked through 1992 images the other day. I can't remember what I was searching for. And all of a sudden I found all these pictures, you know, of Mike Smith when he's a leading rider here, when he was a baby with big hair, and, you know, Christophe Clement when he looked like he was about 15 years old, and Bill Mott and all these people. Now, but these people are all still here, and I'm still hounding them. And how lucky are we?
Right, exactly. It's a race, it's a sport about the swift, but the turtle gets the best benefit out of it by being around it a long time, slow and steady. Right?
I love it. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's funny. Well, we do want to touch upon one other thing. As you said, I've done my homework, and you have a particular eye, literally, for photography, and tell me how you've overcome that and whether that's helped helped your ability or hindered it, do you think?
Yeah, it is interesting. I have really lousy vision, and it's a monocular. I don't use the right eye. It's these shades and colors, but that's it. So I use the left eye, and my left eye has a very high correction. So basically, if somebody's more than maybe 5 or 10 feet away, I really can't tell who they are. I have to pick up the camera all the time. Glasses give me a giant headache, so I use them driving, but I can't wear them the whole day. I can't walk around. It's a motion sickness thing. So
okay.
I have glasses built into my cameras. They're called diopters, and you buy them and you stick them on your camera, and that helps bring it up toward the level of my glasses correction. And I think it helps me because it cuts out all the superfluous stuff. Like, basically, I see shapes, colors, angles, and then I can see, like, somebody's got a blue shirt, and they look like I'm used to the way they walk. And my friends actually will say, hey, look, hi, Barbara, it's so-and-so. So they sort of tell me who they are. But I think that it's helped a lot. I see the world two-dimensionally, so I see it like a photograph, and
right.
I think that helps a lot. And then otherwise, I just keep my camera up almost all the time because it's my glasses, and I think that helps me too. If things happen that are unexpected, or even if they're expected, I think I can see them better because my whole world is centered on just that little spot through that viewfinder. It's not thinking of anything else.
Right.
Well, so I really think it helps me, which is weird.
Fascinating. That's not weird. It's just met. It's destiny, right? It's,
I like it. Meant to be for whatever reason. Yeah, I have no complaints about it, and I'm happy that I'm like that because whatever, it seems to be working.
Well, this has been fascinating. I don't want to keep you any longer than need be. I know how busy you are, and this has been fascinating. I'm so happy you decided to come on the show, and so many people know you, but so many fans don't. I mean, they know
yes.
you by name, and they certainly know your work, but they don't see you running around the way and how hard it is to fight through the whole crowd. And I guess particularly on days, one last thing I'd touch upon is you have the normal contingent of photographers and press folks, but when you have the big days, you have people from everywhere. Does that just become impossible to jockey for position?
Yeah, it becomes really tough. It gets tough to go through the crowds, and it also gets tough because one of my main goals is to keep photography safe for the horses and jockeys. So I
right.
sort of become a little policeman out there because a lot of people don't understand the rules. They come in with a camera for the day and just want to get as close as they can. So that becomes an added element. I'm shooting for the Daily Racing Form, shooting for racing history, but then I'm also trying to make sure everything stays safe. So I sort of, I prefer the days when it's mellow. I will take a relaxed Monday any day over a big Saturday. It's just much more, it's easier to get involved in what I do with singular purpose.
Right. Well, I've had the honor and the pleasure of being in the winner's circle a number of times throughout the years, either my horses, but mostly with friends' horses or people I know. But since I worked back there, I'm always cognizant of the fact that it's an animal, and it just amazes me how people get a little bit reckless in the winner's circle, both of the rider and the horses and their own safety. You know, it's just
yes, the winner's circles definitely make us cringe on occasion. I'm glad that I'm 20, 30 feet away. And you know, how lucky are we the number of times that horses like, say, American Pharoah in the winner's circle, surrounded by people touching every bit of him, and he just stands there like a champion, which he was. And that's fun to watch. It's fun to see all these different personalities and the people involved in these wonderful moments. We're so lucky, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I can't thank you enough. You're welcome back, obviously, anytime. And I'm sure our callers will have a number of questions at some point for us, and we'll convey them to you and our listeners. And, you know, just I hope some people come up and say hello to you from Racetrackers. But, you know, just can't thank you enough for giving us the time today and, you know, looking forward to the rest of the meet.
Well, thank you so much for all you do representing our sport beautifully, too. We so appreciate it. And it's an honor to be on. And happy racing, everybody.
Thanks again. Barbara Livingston, everyone. Good night.
Bye.
Well, as you can tell, it's hard to imagine a more talented, more humble, and more charming person than Barbara Livingston. And the game is lucky to have her, and we're proud to have her on the show. And of course, as we mentioned, if anybody has any questions, I'll gladly convey them to Barbara, and we'll have her back again sometime, anytime she'd like. So with that, I know there's millions of things to talk about. Saratoga's open, which is wonderful. I thank all the people who came into the winner's circle with us this week and the people who sponsored it and my friends who graciously gave us their house to stay in. We thank all our guests tonight. Mike Monroe, always with his sage analysis, and Mike Smith calling in from his busy schedule. Terry Finley talking about his Derby winner. Carlos Martin talking about his wonderfully doing barn right now, and of course Barbara Livingston. So with that, folks, I hope you'll tell anybody who missed it to listen to the replay. And we're going to try to be on Wednesday nights for the Saratoga meet, just because it's a little easier on our guests and a little easier on those of us who are traveling up and down on Thursday nights. And we just want to thank everyone, and please continue to spread the word about Racetrackers and how much fun we have here, and inside look, and how valued all our listeners are. So thanks again, everyone. I'm going to play the song, and let's speak again next week. This is what I love.